93.5. The Tap. 93.5. The Tap. 93.5. The Tap.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Stacy Lynn. Explosions and gunfire early this morning in Gaza. Israeli troops have moved full speed ahead with significant strikes that they say have essentially cut the Gaza Strip in two. U.S. Secretary of State Blinken is on a whirlwind trip to the Middle East, where he's been meeting with leaders in several countries. He says getting the hostages out is a top priority.
We are intensely focused. The United States, Israel, every other country that has one of its citizens being held hostage by Hamas to bring them home.
He's now en route to Turkey. Now, despite calls for a ceasefire, CBS's Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem tells us.
Speaking at an Air Force base, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Israel will not agree to a ceasefire unless all 240 hostages are released. He said that Israel intends to defeat Hamas. He spoke as the Palestinian Health Ministry said the number of Palestinians killed in Israeli airstrikes was approaching 10,000, including thousands of children.
Deputy National Security Advisor John Feiner told Face the Nation another big focus is getting Americans out of Gaza.
We have been able to get out more than 300 Americans, lawful permanent residents, and their family members. This is obviously a major priority and one that we're going to continue to work at until every American who wants to leave is able to do so.
Meanwhile, protests have been taking place all around the world. That's from Athens, Greece, where thousands rallied outside the Israeli embassy. Some local elections are happening on Tuesday, and abortion is a key issue. Virginia is the last state in the South without significant restrictions on abortion rights. So who wins holds a lot of power. They already have a popular GOP governor. And if Republicans are able to sweep the House and Senate, they plan to pass a ban on abortions after 15 weeks. Governor Glenn Youngkin told ABC.
I really feel that this is a moment for us to come together around reasonable limits where we can protect life at 15 weeks where a baby feels pain with full exceptions in the case of rape and incest and when the mother's life is at risk.
We have some very fast winners in this year's New York City Marathon. On ABC, you hear the moment Helen Obiri of Kenya won the women's race.
From the bridge, through the burrows, to the breaking of the tape, Helen Obiri is the champion at the TCS New York City Marathon.
For the men, the winner this year was Ethiopia's Tamarit Tola. He set a record with his time, 2 hours, 4 minutes, and 58 seconds. This is CBS News.
Make the hiring process work for you. With Indeed's end-to-end hiring solution, you can attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credits.
Don't change the station, but do watch out for deer, would ya? You know, they're running around all willy-nilly. It is the Krebs Cast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Your hometown radio refreshed. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio, refreshed. This is 93.5 The Tap. It's what's on tap for the Chippewa Valley. 93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. A mostly cloudy sky, a light south to southeast wind up to 15. Could see some mid to late afternoon sprinkles moving in, otherwise 53 degrees. For your Sunday night, sprinkles and some light rain around, steady temperatures in the lower 50s and staying breezy. Right now it's 55.
Local talk about our hometown and all of Wisconsin has gone untapped until now. You're on 93.5 The Tap. Make sure and tell your friends. Hey.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. You're hearing Stevie Ray Vaughan caught in the crossfire, and if that's how you feel, then you are among kindred spirits here in this part of the country on this Thursday, November 2nd. Another beautiful day to welcome you here up north. from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network, on the app, by podcast, or by social media. Nice to have you here on Lake Wissota, just outside of Chippewa Falls, where we unpack the news for a statewide audience every morning. And here's what's on tap. The economic news continues to be cautiously optimistic. Wages are still inching upward while prices aren't rising as quickly as they had been. And so against that backdrop, President Joe Biden came to the upper Midwest to talk about how Bidenomics has been very good for rural parts of the country. We'll hear a little bit from the president's visit to Northfield, Minnesota, coming up. We'll visit with Joe Zepecki about some of the other political stories making news around Wisconsin this week. In our second hour, we have our weekly Hometown Health segment with Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who will introduce us to a mom who's been raising a child with a rare neuro disease, and how her concern about health care and families has led for her to run for public office. And we'll talk to State Representative Francesca Hong with an update on the fall legislative session, some new proposals from Democratic legislators to improve family health, both physical and financial. We'll visit with Luke Mathers along the way. We'll get the forecast from weatherology meteorologist Jennifer Vuchitsky. And you can be a part of it all, too, by ringing us up at 844-967-2789. Again, 844-967-2789. Don't be shy. We don't bite. I mean, it's only day four of working with Greg Bach, but he has not been known to bite anybody yet. So we'd love to hear from you. Greg is in Waukesha. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Pat. How are you today?
I'm good. You know, Thursdays. Thursdays are always that mix of near exhaustion and completely amped up from the, you know, from the days.
So. I always like the quote from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which is Thursdays. I could never get my head around Thursdays.
It does sound about right. You know, most of the time you're like, okay, I can see the glide path to the weekend. Mm-hmm. But are you, as you're running for the finish line, are you going to run too fast and stumble over your feet and take a digger? You know, either way, Greg's there to take your calls down in Waukesha. I'm up here in Chippewa Falls. Speaking of those fine communities, let's review some temperatures at 6 a.m. It's 21 up here on the lake, 16 in Hayward. Wausau is coming in at 26 degrees. Green Bay, you're at 31. La Crosse, you're at 30 degrees. Wisconsin Rapids, 25 right now. Madison, 34. Park Falls, 16 degrees. Oshkosh, 31. And Waukesha, 32. So quite a range of temperatures around here. I'm guessing depends on cloud cover since it appears to be a quiet day precipitation-wise. But again, details, full details about an hour from now with Jennifer. But then forecast updates throughout the hour here across the Civic Media Radio Network. A reminder that the Up North News Daily newsletter comes out about 5 o'clock every morning. And even as I say that, I say, you know what? I did not look to see what Christina Lurie has put up for us. So even now, I'm opening up my email. It's Native American Heritage Month, and so she lists some Native American museums and cultural centers in Wisconsin that you could be visiting. We also have the story I put together on what Senator Tammy Baldwin has been doing for years to tighten up the rules on secret stock purchases. It's something that was prompted by the closure of the Wausau paper mill in Brokaw many years ago, and she has finally won final approval by the Securities and Exchange Commission to make it a little tougher for vulture capitalists in hedge funds to do to others what they did to the Brokaw mill. So again, to get that, you can sign up for our newsletter over at upnorthnewswi.com. Click newsletter in the banner on top of our homepage and catch it there. All right, let's unpack some of the news now at 6:10. The economic news just continues to get better, and there are some people who are doing their part to make sure that that string continues. The Federal Reserve yesterday left interest rates unchanged, taking a cautious stance on inflation as it retreats, but they still say it's not yet vanquished. Interest rates have been on hold in a range of 5.25% to 5.5% since July, up from near zero as recently as March of 2022. So that's a lot of improvement in a short time, which naturally gives way to inflation. Now the question is, have the efforts to tame inflation been successful enough that you can say the economy is coming in for a soft landing? Policymakers think that borrowing costs are now just high enough To achieve their goal of curbing rapid economic growth and by cooling demand, they're hoping it'll prod companies to raise prices less quickly. Hiring is still quicker than before the pandemic. Wage gains have cooled, but they're still faster than they were before the pandemic. And as Americans win jobs and raises, they're continuing to open their wallets. Spending is still climbing faster than economists expected in September. The growth overall has been much faster than what most forecasters would have expected a year and a half into the Fed's campaign to cool it. I believe all of that is just, if I'm going to translate that for you, that's called a soft landing. And here's what's helping. A presidency and a Democratic-led Congress during the first 2 years of Joe Biden's term that was making investments in targeted parts of the American economy rather than just tax cuts for the very rich and hoping that it trickles down. So over the next couple of weeks, President Biden, cabinet members, and others are barnstorming the country to highlight what they're calling an Investing in Rural America event to talk about ways to bring new revenues to farms, the rural economies, businesses. The president was in Northfield, Minnesota, visiting a farm and talking about all the various ways that some of the programs over the first 2 years of his term have made investments in agricultural techniques, climate smart strategies, limiting soil disturbances, creating buffers to protect nearby waterways from pollutants. And yet, despite these wildly popular and beneficial programs, Republicans, as we've told you before, want to cut $50 billion in the next farm bill from conservation programs. The president talked about $1 billion in more than 100 loan and grant awards to upgrade infrastructure in rural communities. You know what? Let's hear in the president's own words. First off, he's going to tell us from this event in Minnesota how the way things used to be hasn't really been working in rural Wisconsin or rural America.
Over the past 40 years or so, we've had a practice in America, economic practice, called trickle-down economics, and it hit rural America especially hard. It hollowed out Main Street, telling farmers the only path to success was to get big or get out. Tax cuts for big corporations encouraged companies to grow bigger and bigger, move jobs and production overseas for cheaper labor, and undercut local small businesses. Meat-producing companies and the retail grocery chains consolidate, leaving farmers and ranchers with few choices about where to sell their products, reducing their bargaining power. Corporations that sell seed, fertilizer, and even farm equipment use their outsized market power to change farmers and charge them and ranchers unfair prices. You know, in part because of these conditions, over the past four decades, we lost over 400,000 farms in America. Now we're growing an economy from the middle out and the bottom up instead of the top down. Folks at Press have been calling my plan Bidenomics. Well, it's about investing in all of America, all America, including rural America. It's about making things in rural America again. And that's exactly what the historic legislation we passed has done, creating new and better markets and new income streams so that generations of rural Americans can begin to thrive again.
So there's the president in Minnesota explaining exactly the investments that have been needed that are overdue. And we've talked previously on this show about the need for farmers and producers to have more competition in the marketplace so that just a handful of companies aren't controlling prices as much as they had been or are currently. With more markets and more competition, in other words, more capitalism, that's good for everybody. That competition also helps drive down prices for consumers. But to do it took some people to show leadership, and that's what happened in 2021 and 2022 with rural America's investments and more that has been done by the last Congress. Not this one that seems to be unable to tie its own shoes. Let's check sports at 6:16. The Bucks are now down to 2-2 on the season after losing in Toronto 130-111. Joe Sopecki tells us not to read too much into things until about 30 games into the season, but I have seen fans starting to post their concerns. Bucks head coach Adrian Griffin said, "Sometimes getting embarrassed is good because it forces you to focus on doing the right thing consistently." Greg, I am not aware that that was a corporate strategy. I hope is not embraced here at Civic Media, that if we just embarrass you, you'll get better.
That's what I was taught in Catholic grade school, yes. Catholic middle school, and consequently Catholic high school.
And
look at me now.
Look at us now, right up there in the C-suite, in the corner offices. So the Bucks have to get it together for their next game. It's Friday at home against the Knicks. And by the way, we had some problems yesterday with the Civic Media app routing programs, and I hope everything is set today. But if you think that day was bad, how about the guys running the Bally Sports streaming service? It was down again for a second consecutive Milwaukee Bucks game. The company had posted last night that they knew about it, but the same thing had happened on Monday's game. And the company had posted on Twitter yesterday, "We want to assure our viewers the issue is resolved," you know, until it wasn't. So good luck to them and to all of us who are running apps, because technology ain't nothing like it. The number 2 ranked Badger women's volleyball team was a winner at home last night against Purdue, 3-1. That takes them to 21-1 on the season. Their next match is Saturday night, 7:00 at home against Illinois. And finally, in the World Series, if you wanted the Arizona Diamondback fans to suffer after they eliminated the Brewers in the playoffs, you got your wish. Needing a win to stay alive last night in Arizona, their pitcher Zach Gallen had a no-hitter going through 6 innings against the Texas Rangers. The crowd was wild, but neither team had scored yet, and that ended in the 7th when Gallen gave up 3 straight hits. The Rangers were on their way to a 5-0 victory to win the club's first ever World Series title. And so the Brewers now have one of the longest droughts in all of baseball without a World Series ring. We'll pause here, and when we come back, we'll cover some more of the news that's happening around the nation and around Wisconsin, wherever you're listening, across the state on this nice Thursday morning. When you're here, you're up north. We'll be right back.
.5 The Tap.
Opt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, "Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case."
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Why, Stevie Wonder? Well, you're going to have to wait till today's history lesson and music break. That's coming up a little bit later on this hour on this Thursday morning. Packers, by the way, are at home against the Rams noon on Sunday. The WIAA High School Football Playoffs third round is tomorrow, and I believe we will have Jimmy Koska here yet again to tell us more about that. The Badger women's hockey team, top-ranked in the nation, back in action tomorrow at St. Thomas. And by the way, the Badger men's hockey team is now ranked 5th in the nation, and they are home against number 6 Michigan on Friday and Saturday. Senator Tammy Baldwin joined several other women senators on Wednesday in sending a public message to the new Speaker of the House, warning Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana that his long record of opposing LGBTQ rights, his long record of opposing women's health care rights, will not be welcomed in the U.S. Senate, where Democrats are in the majority. Johnson was previously an attorney for an anti-abortion legal organization that engineered the end of Roe v. Wade. He's been working to overturn FDA approval of mifepristone, has openly advocated and co-sponsored bills that would ban abortion nationwide and criminalize providers, including bans before many people even know they're pregnant. Johnson received an A-plus rating from one of the big anti-abortion rights groups that demands candidates support a nationwide abortion ban in order to win their support. So against that backdrop, Senator Baldwin and several other women called a press conference for yesterday where they made that very public warning to Mike Johnson that that might have helped get him elected. It might have helped make him a leader amongst the right-wing fringe in the House. But as House Speaker, where bills have to go through the Senate, that dog ain't going to hunt here.
We know that reproductive health care remains under attack. And just look at the new Speaker's record. He has a well-documented history of opposing gay marriage, calling them, quote, counterfeit legal arrangements, end quote, pushed by, quote, radical homosexual advocacy groups, close quote. He has a track record of bullying LGBTQ plus youth, introducing a bill to mimic Florida's Don't Say Gay law. And of course, Speaker Johnson has a laundry list of ways he has tried to oppose a woman's right to choose. I stand here today to say in no uncertain terms, every American deserves the freedom to make their own health care decisions without interference from politicians. And the American people overwhelmingly agree. They have said time and again that they don't want politicians butting in to their personal health care decisions. We're here today to make clear to Speaker Johnson that advancing any legislation that seeks to further restrict access to abortion will not see the light of day in the Senate. While I'm always committed to working with anyone to deliver for Wisconsin and our nation, I think it's equally important that we stand up for the rights and freedoms of all Americans.
That's Senator Tammy Baldwin, among many other women who spoke in that press conference yesterday. And that's just about the social issues, the culture war issues that right-wing Republicans have a tendency to bring up these days in Congress and the legislature. But there's the economic aspects of it as well. And I'm glad to see that one particular proposal this week is getting widespread attention and being essentially shot down, mocked, ridiculed, whatever you want to call it. And that has to do with predicating any aid to Israel on cutting funds for the Internal Revenue Service to go after tax cheats. The Congressional Budget Office put out a report on that proposal of deferring money from the IRS, not deferring, taking it and applying it again to anything else, just anything. If you take that away from tax enforcement, what it would do would cost the U.S. $26 billion in revenue. It would lead to a net deficit increase of $14 billion over the next decade. Because if you're hamstringing the IRS, it makes it easier for tax cheats to get away with evasion, increasing the burden on everyone else. And if you've heard me bring this up before, you're going to hear me bring it up again because it's a real bugaboo or be in my bonnet. Greg, how many old man expressions have I got here? Bugaboo, be in the bonnet.
I believe in you.
You know what really frosts my cake? You know,
what really grinds your gears?
Exactly. Is this proposal of let's take everything away from the IRS, the big bad IRS, when what you're taking away is their ability to go after the millionaires and the billionaires out there who aren't paying their fair share? The rest of us are. The rest of us are playing by the rules. It's those who don't play by the rules who get cracked down on. I can't tell you over the years how many of those commercials I've heard about, I owed the IRS this much. They were going to garnish my wages. They were going to take... Then pay your taxes. We all do. If you can't, you can work out financing arrangements. But you can't just run away from the problem because, like anything else, you run away from your bills, they catch up with you. We can debate all day tax policy. We can debate all day tax rates. In fact, we're going to put up a question on the Up North News social media feeds as early as today asking, where does the middle class end? Where does it top out? And the reason we ask is because Republicans have flattened all the tax brackets to the point where somebody making about $400,000 is paying the exact same tax rate as somebody making something like $35,000. And so when they want to cut taxes and they say it's a middle class tax cut in that bracket, is $400,000 middle class? It doesn't seem like it to me, but we want to know, you know, where other folks think it is. You can certainly tell us as well, 844-967-2789. If you were going to do some kind of a tax cut or tax break, where would it top out? Where's the level of income where either there wouldn't be any tax cut or you would start to reduce it, you know, by so many percent as you go up the ladder? What constitutes that? I thought personally Democrats made a huge mistake in the early parts of the Obama presidency when they said that, you know, that level is about $200,000. I would have said $200 million because $200,000 is a whole lot of hometown white collar professionals, doctors, lawyers, you know, you name it. And those were a whole lot of people that said, hey, I am middle class. Now, granted, somebody making $35,000 would not necessarily agree with that, but $200,000 was probably not where to put the number. But I also wouldn't put it at $400,000 for tax relief either. But regardless, it's the people who are making much more than that that have been looking for ways to skimp, cheat. And they're not cheating the IRS, they're cheating all the rest of us. And so for Republicans to continue to say, well, this is going to lead to 87,000 agents knocking on the doors of middle-class families. No, it's not. Nobody believes that. And the statistics are already showing how the increased investment, helping the IRS catch up on the backlog, is bringing in the money that would take care of our needs, the needs that we are all paying for. We are all playing by the rules. And so they should too. Joseph Pecky's up next. You're up north.
On air, 93.5 FM. Online, thetap.com. And on the Civic Media app. This is 93.5 The Tap.
CBS News Brief. Secretary of State Blinken is in the Middle East. He's made several stops to meet with leaders of several countries, discussing the potential for a ceasefire, and says it must advance a number of things, including the release of hostages.
Everyone would welcome humanitarian pauses. There's no doubt about that. There are obviously different views, including on the question of the ceasefire.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders on CNN's State of the Union.
We have got to stop the bombing now. You have over 600,000 people pushed out of their homes. Where are they going?
A possible Biden-Trump rematch in 2024 has Americans reacting. Director of Elections and Surveys Anthony Salvanto told Face the Nation.
Donald Trump's voters are more apt to say they're hopeful and motivated about this idea of a possible rematch. Biden's voters, and a lot of voters, more apt to say that they're nervous, even frustrated about it.
According to the new poll, Biden trails Trump by 3 points. CBS News Brief. I'm Stacey Lynn.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
The Bucks win a tournament game. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks are headed to Brooklyn to play the Nets tomorrow night, the tip-off time at 6:30. Friday night, the Bucks beat the Knicks 110-105 thanks to a key three-point shot in the fourth quarter by Milwaukee's Damian Lillard.
It just basically gave me an opportunity to come from behind Giannis's defender because he had the ball. So his man, instead of me going uphill where he can see the action coming, I went back door, and then I came back uphill from behind the defender. So once I kind of turned the corner with the handoff, I knew he wouldn't be able to just jump it because I was coming from behind him.
That was the Bucks' first in-season tournament game, which basically means the games are played on a different flooring surface. There are trophies awarded. And most importantly, if your team wins a tournament, each player receives a $500,000 cash bonus. College football. Wisconsin Badgers now fall to 5-4 after losing in Indiana 20-14. Head coach Luke Fickell.
We've got to find a way to do what we said we were going to do at the start of the year. Is finish.
With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio, refreshed.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. A mostly cloudy sky, a light south to southeast wind up to 15. Could see some mid to late afternoon sprinkles moving in, otherwise 53 degrees. For your Sunday night, sprinkles and some light rain around, steady temperatures in the lower 50s, and staying breezy. It's 57 at our studios.
Don't let biased algorithms, or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes, don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight.
The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know what's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
I had tweeted out after the second game of the year, a hot take. I said, by the end of the year, we will see Braden Locke as the starting quarterback of the Wisconsin Badgers. Now, Mr. Mordecai broke his hand. And by golly, not the way I thought it would happen, but Braden Locke has become the starting quarterback.
And another finger on the monkey's paw curls.
Where did you get that one?
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Step on up and enjoy what's on tap today. Local talk about the valley and all of Wisconsin. In fact, it's on tap every day. This is 93.5 The Tap. K.
Back now on Up North News Radio, 7:34 on this Monday morning, October 30th. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Missy Hughes is about to join us from the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. We'll start by talking about a special designation for the state that we got into late last week and hear a bit more about that. But there was also a Wisconsin Economic Summit that we'll be talking about as well. And Missy Hughes joins us now. Missy, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Nice to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us. And let's start with the news of that technology hub that was part of President Biden's CHIPS and Science Act and all of the potential that it has for Wisconsin. You want to start first with your reaction to Wisconsin getting the technology hub designation? Because I know it was a lot of work to pursue that. Then we'll get into more about what it is. But let's start with the news that Wisconsin won that designation.
Well, it's tremendous news. There were hundreds of applications all around the country. And so for Wisconsin to really shine above those other applications, there were 31 designations out of, like I said, hundreds of opportunities. So we're really, really, really proud and excited about the work that's happened.
So how do you then describe it to, lay folks when they say, what is this technology hub thing? You know, what tangible expectations do we have from it?
Well, first and foremost, the Biden administration reached out all across the nation and said to different regions and municipalities, we want your best ideas. We want to know what's happening in your region and how that's going to help us with some of our most pressing national security issues. And so Wisconsin got together, we brought together a group of leaders and we said, okay, you know, where do we shine? And of course, Wisconsin's economy is so diverse that we shine in many, many different ways. But we have an up and coming biohealth ecosystem that we are particularly excited about. So from the Milwaukee to the Madison corridor, reaching up into the Fox Valley, Green Bay, over to Eau Claire, we have folks working on what we're calling personalized medicine. And so it's this idea that when you go into your doctor, you get treatment that is exactly personalized to what you're experiencing. So imagine, God forbid, Pat, that you have a cancer tumor. In Wisconsin, we're developing not only genomic sequencing for how to treat that cancer, we're taking all the data that we know all around the world, and we're putting that data into what's the best treatment for that cancer. And then we're developing the advanced manufacturing to build the radiography and the machinery, the CAT scans, the MRIs that are going to treat that cancer. And so what we're seeing is all the way from the classroom and the labs at our universities to the hospital rooms, the potential to really change the game when it comes to your healthcare. And so we should be incredibly proud that it's happening. But from my perspective, from the perspective of the economy, we're also excited that it's happening because it's a real opportunity.
Let's talk about the public-private partnership aspect of this, because you're head of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, which was once upon a time the Wisconsin Department of Commerce, but again now has more of a public-private face to it. These technology hubs appear to be an example of what, as well, of it's one thing to wait for the private sector to come in and hope that somebody comes in and builds a factory in your state or hometown. A public-private partnership does what in terms of, you know, making sure that the public sector, our elected representatives, our tax dollars have some kind of a role to play in economic development as well?
Well, what we're really wanting to do is take the public dollars and fill a market gap, right? If there's this opportunity that's happening, where can an injection of taxpayer public dollars really supercharge something? So if you think about our biohealth ecosystem that we're developing, the private sector is rocking and rolling on that. But honestly, they've been struggling a little bit with the workforce. And so the injection of dollars, we anticipate, will really help make sure that we've got the workforce to deliver when it comes to the research, when it comes to the entrepreneurship, and when it comes to the advanced manufacturing that we anticipate really seeing from this.
Okay, so there's a lot of potential here for this technology hub and for the job creation that could come from it. But you already hinted at something that is a very much a current topic, and that is workforce development, or, you know, workforce training, the labor shortages that we are finding in some industries right now. And I'm not trying to go all glass half empty on this, but if we have difficulties right now because of not only demographics, but also, frankly, in my opinion, a hostile legislature, if we have difficulties right now with the labor shortage, how does this technology hub, how do you help yourself make sure that, you know, this is something that where it's part of the solution and not exacerbating an already existing problem?
Well, what we have to really keep in mind is that we can't stand still. Right. I used to work for a farmer who would say, you're either moving forward or you're moving backward. You can't stand still. And so we have to keep moving forward in thinking about the workforce of tomorrow. And, you know, while we do have record high unemployment, I said that right, right?
Record high employment. Yeah.
Record low unemployment. I knew that came Monday morning. You know, we have to think about what are those jobs of tomorrow. And so where we have jobs today that are, you know, focused on taking care of somebody who's in really long-term chemotherapy treatment. And the reality is we can jump that patient ahead to a radiology treatment then we can see that we start to free up some of that workforce. And so always thinking about where progress is taking us and preparing our workforce for it is really the key piece of addressing, you know, the challenges that we face today.
And that immediately makes me think of a case where we talked about helping people move from one group of jobs to another, and it didn't work out exactly that way. And that was NAFTA back in the 90s. And I think the economy paid a bit of a price because not enough was done to help workers whose jobs were, you know, frankly, outsourced to move into the jobs that we need now. The lessons that we've learned since that time, it seems to me, says all the more reason why we need to be supportive, not just of, say, the UW system and our tech colleges as a base, but to help them grow the work that they do to prepare a workforce. And that just brings me back to the UW-Madison, with all the potential it has to build up its College of Engineering, and yet that particular proposal seems stuck again in the state capitol. So you're certainly very well aware of the challenges we have to get people trained for the jobs of tomorrow.
Well, there was a lot there, Pat. The first thing that I'll say is I think what's really interesting about the technology hub is we're really looking for these things to be private sector led. In other words, the private sector is going to help us identify the gaps, and then we're going to come in as government and fill those gaps. The challenge where you have government really leading the market, I think, is when you see those kind of, you know, kind of policy challenges that then turn into real problems. The second piece I'll say is, you know, every day I have to talk to businesses about either expanding here or coming to Wisconsin or just keeping their operations going here. And the key to that is the workforce. The key to that is investing in our universities and our technical colleges. And I 100% agree that we have to be investing in those. Those are institutions that have been created for over 100 years. I was at the 175th anniversary of UW-Madison on Friday night. We've already invested in these institutions. It's a shame to let them, you know, die on the vine or even, you know, wilt a little bit. And so we really need to really keep investing in them. And we just have to keep talking to our legislature about that.
Yeah, especially with a record, you know, $7 billion budget surplus that we have going on here. But let's take a step back on the technology hubs. And I want to repeat, come back to a point that we made last week as well. And that is that this is not just people think, oh, technology jobs. These are things that are just going to be people in white lab coats, and you're going to need, you know, a postgraduate, you know, 6 years, 8 years of post high school training for that. To build the infrastructure of a technology hub, as companies come in, you need distribution and everything else that comes along with it. I mean, this is so much bigger news than maybe some folks appreciate if this goes according to plan, right?
Yeah, I mean, the way I think about it is, if you think about hospital jobs right now, you know, there's a lot of people doing very low tech, hard working jobs. And of course, we're still going to need that hands-on delivery of service. But we're also going to need people to build these really high-tech machines. We're going to need people to be able to maintain these really high-tech machines. We're going to need people who are running these machines in the hospitals. And so the, you know, adding this technology to our healthcare will enable, you know, both the patient to get much better service, but also the delivery of that service to be much more high tech and a much more, you know, exciting opportunity for someone coming up in their career.
So that is a look at what could be a very bright Wisconsin future. Let's talk about the present here. And that was the focus recently of the 2023 Wisconsin Economic Summit in Appleton. And we're talking to Missy Hughes from the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation about that. You had a theme for the summit called Together, all about partnerships. So can you tell us a bit about the Economic Summit and the types of current day topics that business leaders explored?
Well, what we're doing at the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation is hosting an annual Wisconsin Economic Summit in order to really focus on where is our economy actually and how's it actually doing. There's a lot of noise out in the world about, you know, this and that and things going up and down. The reality is when we talk to our businesses, when we talk to our workforce, people have their choice of jobs that, you know, as long as they have the skills that they need, and our businesses are doing everything they can to hang on to their workforce. They're increasing benefits. They're looking at wages. They're thinking about flexibility. And our businesses, you know, when I talk to them, they are so anxious to grab onto the opportunities that they see out there. Their markets are increasing. Their opportunities are increasing. And so the Wisconsin Economic Summit provides us an opportunity to kind of regroup and say, okay, the economy is still very, very strong. How do we together address the things that we need to do in order to keep that going? How do we address making sure that everybody has a chance to get to work and to fully participate, whether it's, you know, through transportation challenges or childcare challenges? Those are the things that together we need to really be working on in order to keep the economy going as strong as it is.
And one of the topics that you covered was called innovative sustainability and energy solutions. And I'd like to know a bit more about that, because we spend a lot of time focusing on the human aspect, you know, the labor shortage and workforce development. But when it comes to energy and sustainable resources, especially in an era of a changing climate, these are the kinds of things that businesses, is it worth their while to learn more about it?
Well, this is another place like biotech where we really see Wisconsin businesses storming ahead. We had the opportunity to talk with businesses like Kimberly-Clark and U.S. Energy and the Menominee Timber Company and talk to them about what are they doing, what are the opportunities they see when it comes to sustainability. And it's both a question of they're meeting the consumer's needs, but also doing business more productively and efficiently, and therefore being more successful. So these are things that are already happening in the Wisconsin economy and in our industry. And so we wanted to highlight them and let people know that, again, there are more opportunities out there than not.
All right. So we've come to the point where you've talked about the things that businesses and investment would like to do for Wisconsin. But I have to close by saying that we're still in a fall legislative session. Do you have a wish list for before the legislature wraps up the calendar year?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be investing in our universities and making sure that our university employees are taken care of. Let's get that engineering building built. As you said, we've got a record surplus. We should be investing some of that back in Wisconsin and thinking about the future.
Very good. Missy Hughes from the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Missy, great to talk to you. Come back again soon. Wish you all the best.
Thank you, Pat.
All right. When we come back, we'll talk to Terry Bell, Civic Media News Director. Three things you should know to get the week started here on a Monday morning, October 30th, here on Up North News Radio. We'll be back.
You're listening to 93.5, The Tap. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
The delusions of grandeur have come to an end, as has the campaign of former Vice President Mike Pence. You know, people didn't care for him so much. I don't know why. You know, January 6th, they just wanted to hang him at the gallows, Dom.
I mean, at least they knew his name. You know, there's no such thing as bad PR, Crudy.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Matt Flynn Direct.
When it comes to shutting down the government, what I'm afraid is Mike Johnson comes in, he'll say real smooth, I don't want to shut down the government. Here's a budget. And you'll go, hey, wait a minute. That has cuts in child care, Social Security. And he'll smile. He's sort of like Scott Walker. People who are unnervingly polite behind that kind of facade, they have a lot of inner weasels. They have too many inner weasels, quite frankly.
Matt Flynn Direct. Weekdays from 2 until 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. 93.5, The Tap.
Maxine Nightingale turns 71 today. Any excuse for a Civic Media dance party, which is broken out here on the live video feed that you can see on the Civic Media Facebook page or the Facebook page for Up North News. and several other places until they yank us for dropping this disco ball and showing off our moves. Luke Mathers, how are you?
I'm good, Pat. I'm good. Glad to be with you on this Thursday morning.
Where are you? It's I'm trying to see. I see a blank monitor behind you because I know the Madison studio is now. Oh, are you in that conference room there next to it? Okay.
You have many monitors there.
So many monitors to look at. Todd Alba, you know, yesterday, but he was at the window so we could see the state capitol over his shoulder. So we have to put something distracting in that monitor behind you here. I guess.
That would have been better framing. I'm upset with myself that I didn't do that now.
No, you're a radio guy. Don't listen. The TV guy is just always going to find something to nitpick at, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like that Room Raider account, remember that Room Raider on Twitter would look at people's guest appearances on TV and then rate the room? I mean, mm-hmm. look at Kristen right now. Has a lamp balancing in the left, some fine artwork in the center. There, she's moved over a bit, so she's properly framed, you know. 9 out of 10.
And then there's me. You know,
hotel, sweet
and
hotel.
And then Greg with an empty chair behind him that really should have somebody just eating a bag of popcorn. And we never know who it is. It's just some guy that just sits there, actually cracks peanuts, throws the shells on the floor.
Remember when Clint Eastwood talked to an empty chair at the Republican? that's Barack Obama right behind me. I got Barack Obama. Hey, Barry. You want to go hang out after this? Get a coffee? Barack Obama.
I was talking to an old former coworker of mine, Tanita, and she's in South Carolina, and she's offered to be my anger translator, much like
Key and Peele.
Yeah. She'd make a great anger translator. We could use somebody like that here. Coming up next on most of these civic media stations, you've got Earl Ingram. In Wausau, you've got Chad Holmes, Madison Stephanie Miller, James and the Gang in Wisconsin Rapids. They're all followed by As Goes Wisconsin with one Greg Bach and Jane Matinere.
This guy.
Todd Alba at noon, Matt Flynn at 2, Devils at 4, Maggie Dawn at 6. Normally on these Thursdays, we talk to Luke or Aaron or Sam or whoever will walk by the studio and say, hey, what else is on civic media? So, Luke, thanks for being our willing victim. What else is on civic media that we can talk about?
I just want to say really quick, Luke, you're so handsome and so good at your job. And
try to butter me up. Every opportunity he gets on the air.
Thank you for being here. Luke's my boss.
Oh, okay. Didn't realize Greg, there was a direct line here. Okay.
He doesn't miss an opportunity there. Okay. But I appreciate all of that, Greg.
All right,
We got the Cripescast this weekend, noon across the Civic Media Network. But one of the fun things that you can now listen to, the Milwaukee Bucks season tipped off last week. Unfortunately, a little bit of a struggle last night in Toronto. The guys getting it together. They're going to be playing the Heat on Friday night. The Knicks on Friday night. They played the Heat earlier this week. Mm-hmm. The Knicks on Friday night for the first in-season tournament. So you can catch the Milwaukee Bucks on 6 Civic Media stations across the network.
Wait a minute. We have to talk about this in-season tournament.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, what do you want to know?
Everything. Because I'm still not quite sure how we're going to do we want to get into this right now? Do you know everything about it?
Everything about it? No,
about it?
I'm more than happy to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks, so let's talk through it. What are your concerns?
Now, first, you just say anything. I'm just watching Kristen's eyes glaze over here. She's already
writing
prescriptions.
I don't know anything about this. I haven't even heard about this.
Is this in soccer where they all of a sudden just stop and go?
That's just what I was going to say. Yes, they have they stop the regular season and they do this kind of tournament thing, but in this one, the tournament is with themselves.
Well, they don't stop the regular season either. All of these games count for the in-season games count towards the tournament record and then the placement for that tournament. So it's going to be interesting to see how it unfolds, but this is going to be the first ever NBA Cup. So you've got the Larry O'Brien Trophy at the end of the NBA Finals, mm-hmm. but now teams will also be eligible for the NBA Cup after the in-season tournament. So there's a matchup with your own conference. You have several in-season game circled on the calendar that then will make you eligible for the in-season tournament later in the year, in the season. And it'll take place in Las Vegas, where potentially there may be an expansion team coming for the NBA in the next couple of years.
Anything that... Oh, hold, Greg. I just want to get this one thought in. Anything that I don't know, maybe justice isn't the word that I'm looking for, but here's what I want to say. The Arizona Diamondbacks just won the World Series.
No.
In the regular season, or I'm sorry, the Texas Rangers just won the World Series against the Arizona Diamondbacks. The Arizona Diamondbacks finished 16 games behind the Dodgers in the standings in the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not sure that format is working. So if some kind of another in-season tournament provide some justice to people who actually go and win day in and day out, you know, that's a good thing. So I'll give this NBA thing a chance.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the inaugural season goes for it. I think it will bring an interesting dynamic to load management for some of the all-stars and the big players that like Giannis Antetokounmpo, Damian Lillard. It's been questioned if they're taking days off throughout the season because, like you said, as soon as the playoffs come, any team that's in the playoffs could win. You could have the Diamondbacks or you could have the Miami Heat last year in the NBA go really far when not having the best in-season record. So they're trying to incentivize more of the players to take the in-season games seriously and have a lot more on the line day in and day out.
Yeah, Tony writes in, it's like the FA Cup in England for soccer. And Tony also wrote in, Charlie interviewed Nate Bergatz, who hosted Saturday Night Live last Saturday, if people want to go and hear it. So you gasped, Greg, you gasped.
Nate Bergatz is like one of the best comedians, period.
Mm-hmm.
He's so good.
Taylor Tomlinson just got announced as the new late night host as well, following Stephen Colbert. So young comedians.
They're bringing it back. Because they canceled that show and they were going to reboot at midnight, which, and very happy about this.
Yeah, Taylor Tomlinson. Now I feel like inadequate because I'm also the same age as her, and she's got a late night national TV show. So I got to start getting a little bit more motivated around here again.
Speaking of ages, I did not want to embarrass Fran, but you know we had Francesca Hung on. We wished her a happy birthday.
Mm-hmm. FranFest this weekend.
My humble moment this weekend was going, how old is she? And then I looked, and my older daughter turned 35 on Monday. She turns 35 this weekend. She's 4 days older than or younger than my older daughter.
Okay.
So I won't tell you how young I am.
I'm not feeling it at all. Not feeling old.
I don't like you anymore, Luke Mathers.
Anyway, on that note, Kristen, Greg, Luke, thank y'all. Hope you have a great day.
Yep, you too.
It's going to be wonderful.
Hey, Kristen's like, all right.
Kristen played along so nice. Tomorrow, Kia Vakil, Dan Schumacher, and Mark Jacob. Y'all have a great Thursday. We'll see you tomorrow.
From Lake Wissota State Park and the Pablo Center, the entire Chippewa Valley is tapping in to the station talking about your hometown. 93.5, The Tap. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Stacey Lynn. Israel's military is not letting up in its effort to fully destroy Hamas. The Gaza Strip has essentially been cut in two as strikes continue by air and on the ground. And now phone and internet service is out again. CBS's Linda Gradstein reports from Jerusalem.
It is the third time since the war began that communications have been cut in Gaza, presumably by Israel. It came as Israeli warplanes struck two refugee camps in Gaza, killing at least 50 53 Palestinians and wounding dozens of others, according to Palestinian health officials. Israel says it does everything possible to avoid hitting civilians.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken made a surprise visit to Baghdad today and issued a warning to groups trying to take advantage of the war.
It was very important to send a very clear message to anyone who might seek to take advantage of the conflict in Gaza to threaten our personnel here or anywhere else in the region. Don't do it.
The CIA director is in Israel now, meeting with multiple intelligence counterparts and leaders to discuss the situation in Gaza, discuss support for hostage negotiations, and how to stop the conflict from widening. Meanwhile, protesters across the world have been out in full force. Turkish police use tear gas and water cannons on hundreds of people trying to storm an airbase that houses American troops. Thousands rallied outside the Israeli embassy in Athens, Greece today as well, waving Palestinian flags.
Many women, men, and children are dying. They have no resources. They don't have basic life needs. And this is really, really unfair.
So how do Americans feel about the ongoing war between Israel and Hamas? Jennifer DePinto with the latest findings of a new CBS News poll.
Most Americans have sympathy for both the Israeli and Palestinian people, but sympathy for the Israelis is higher. Democrats show equal sympathy for both groups, while Republicans have far more sympathy.